Where I come from, you begin by saying, gentlemen, I crave your indulgence, which means I'm asking for your attention. I'm not going to lecture you. It's not so long ago that I resented very much being spoken down to, like some of you probably do. So what we're going to do is speak across. I'm going to discover and look at something together. But you need a little bit of background, so I'm going to supply us with a little bit of background. You all know, Sholosh Pomim Bashona Yeroa Kol Zchurcha, there are three what are proverbially called food festivals. Because they're called food festivals because there's a chiyuv to be oiler regel on these three festivals, on these three Yomim Tovim every year, Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot. But the Chinuch asks Akasha. The Chinuch says, it would appear, if you look at the calendar, that the three festivals are not symmetrical. I mean, if we were HaKadosh Baruch, we would have designed the Yomim Tovim, you know, you need a boost every 4 months. So there would have been one Yom Tov, and then 3.5 months goes by, and another Yom Tov, and then 3.5 months goes by, and another Yom Tov, and round and around and around she goes, and this is the way it would go, Keseda, Keseda, Keseda. And the Rebbeinu Shem didn't do it that way. The Rebbeinu Shem put two festivals down in spring and summer, one in the autumn, and more or less nothing in the winter. The whole winter goes by. I mean, you know, you come back to yeshiva after your sukkah's bein hazmanim, and you know, we're in for a long grind. It's like 5 months, and sometimes it's 6 months. It's a long grind. Why did the Rebbeinu Shem do it like that? That's the kasha. That's the kasha that the Chinuch asks. And the Chinuch answers something which he takes his way, because he's talking to his people, and we can take our way, because we know our people. He says like this, in an agricultural country, where things have to grow in order for you to be able to eat, where things have to grow in order for you to be able to push and survive. So in the winter when nothing is growing, you're going to be dead from. In the winter when you look out and it's bleak and it's black and it's negative and there's nothing growing, you'll go to shul and you say, Rabbeinu Shalom, I hope what we have in stock will last us until the next harvest. I don't know, you know, there's only a certain amount of potatoes, there's only a certain amount of grain, I don't know. In the summer when you look out the window and you see, Baruch Hashem, the sun's shining, you know, the stuff is growing. Yeah, there could be the temptation of Ayishman Yeshurun Vayiva. There could be the temptation of waxing fat and rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch. You know the story about the guy that says to Rebbeinu Shem, he's on his way to a meeting. He's on his way to a meeting and he needs a parking place. He hasn't got where to put the car. So he says, Rebbeinu Shem, I'm running very, very late. If you find me a parking place, yeah, I'll give X amount of money to Tzedakah. And he goes around the block 4 more times and he says, he just doubles the ante. He says, I'll give so much and so much to Tzedakah. And then finally, he sees the parking place. He says, Rebbeinu Shem, I'm sorry, I found the parking place. It's not Negea no more. The promises are void, yeah? In the summertime, it's easy to rebel. It's easy to move away. Very easy to move away. Says the Chinuch, therefore you need the extra boost in the summer. So the Rebbeinu Shem was Masada when things begin to grow in Eretz Yisrael, which is Pesach, and when you're already harvesting, because this is the time of the Ketzir Achitim VeHasa'ir, and this is the time of the harvesting and of the wheat and the barley, another little boost just to make sure that you remember who provided the parking space. You have to remember who provided what you have so that you don't wax fat and go away. Alright. We know, however, that in the world that we live in, 2006, you know, where we are now, The world that we live in, the nisyonis in the summer are much greater even than the nisyonis in the winter. The nisyonis in the summer, as far as little Torah is concerned, the nisyonis in the summer in terms of seeing what you're not supposed to see and going where you're not supposed to go, are much greater even than the nisyonis in the winter. As far as we're concerned, they complain to farmers. We're not farmers and we don't worry about agriculture. And the last time you looked at the stock prices in terms of what grows from the ground was when somebody showed them to you and doing an economics course or whatever it was. But we know that the summer is a harder thing to cope with in terms of Yetzer Hara than the winter is to cope with in terms of Yetzer Hara. So as far as we're concerned, what the Rebbeinu Shlom did by putting Shavuos in, where he put in Shavuos, was a very valuable thing. And so from Pesach, all the way till Shavuos, we're counting the days for Kabbalah Satoira. Every day we count the days, we count the weeks, we're counting the days until we get to Kabbalah Satoira. But Kabbalah Satoira is something which I want to propose today to you, has got to be something which is balanced. Let me tell you a nice Shtikl Torah about balance. Yeah. In a few weeks you're going to be learning Parshas Baal Oischa. And at the end of Baal Oischa, remember, this is a short period of time after all of Klal Yisrael, men, women and children, everybody said Naaseh v'nishma, we're on, we're going with you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever you say goes, without even knowing what the Rebbeinu Shlom says. And at the end of Baal Oischa, you get Misayin, and we're complaining against the Kodesh Baruch Hu. They don't like the diet that they're on. They don't like the food that they're given. It says, Boicha l'mishpuchosof, that the Jews were crying l'mishpuchosof. So Rashi says, two pirushim. Rashi says, one pirush that the families got together and they cried en masse. It wasn't individuals crying in their bedrooms. No! It was an activity done by the entire family, the ganze mishpacha. The mommy was crying, the daddy was crying, the kinderlach were crying, everybody was crying. Boicha l'mishpacha yisor. That's one pirush in Rashi. Another pirush in Rashi, boicha l'mishpacha yisor, is that they were crying because they were forbidden to marry or to undertake certain liaisons which before Matan Torah they were allowed to do. So they were boicha l'mishpacha yisor, they were boicha because they were restricted in terms of arroyos. They couldn't take the kinds of wives, they couldn't marry whom they wanted to marry, boicha l'mishpacha yisor. So the Maharal Prague asks a beautiful kasha. He says, I don't understand. Everybody at Matan Torah was a gersh and his gaya. Because before Matan Torah we weren't yidden. And at Matan Torah we became yidden. If a geshen is gaier, if a ger becomes nisgaier, it's ketotin shenoy v'adomi. It's like a rebirth, a brand new birth. And a ger, technically, a ger is allowed to marry his own sister. Even though genetically he comes from the same parents that the sister comes from, but since he was nisgaier, it's a new existence, he can marry his own sister. So what's the beich of the mishpachaisa? What kind of restrictions did they have? Every single Jew, man, woman, and child, was a geshen is gaier, and a geshen is gaier. They were reborn, so what's the problem? What were they crying about? They could do anything they wanted. To which the Maharal Mipraga says an interesting teretz. He says that the Kabbalah Satori that took place at that time was not a voluntary Kabbalah Satori. Kabbalah Satori that took place at that time, like the Gemara says in Shabbos, was Kafa Aleihem Har Kegigis. They had the mountain perched over their heads, and the Rebbeinu Shlom said to them, basically, Im tekabelu es haTorah mutar, you accept the Torah good, and if not, Shom Tehei Kvurashem. Say goodbye. That's it. It's over. Yeah? Umameila, that kfiya, the fact that it was done b'derech kfiya, that means that it wasn't perfect. There was a fault in balance someplace. It wasn't perfect. It took many generations until Klal Yisrael took it upon themselves. That was at the time of Mordechai and Esther, etc., etc. Fine. So because it was done bikfia, and it was an imperfect Kabbalah Satoira, it didn't give them the heter to do those things which under other circumstances they might be able to do. That's what the Maharal Mipraga answers. It wasn't the perfect Kabbalah Satoira. Very good. So I saw a goinus, a brilliance from the Haflor. the Hafla brings a raya to what the Maharal Miprag says. Interesting Gemara. Do you remember the story that Miriam became Mitzayra? Miriam spoke Lashon Hara to Aaron about Moshe Rabbeinu, and Miriam became a Mitzayra. So the Gemara in Zvachim says, Moshe and Aaron, mi yazgir as Miriam? Who will be able to officiate? There was a certain ritual that the Kohen had to go through to lock her up and then to pronounce her Ois Mitzayra. Who's going to do this? Says the Gemara, Moshe can't do it. Moshe is a Zohar. He's not a Kohen. And a Zohar cannot be Roy and a Goyen. And Aaron can't do it. You know why? Because Aaron is a Korov. Hey, brother! Fred Demasho, I don't understand. What's the matter? Aaron is not... And Moshe is not a brother? All of a sudden, only Aaron is a brother. Moshe is not a brother? What do you need two separate reasons for? Moshe is a Zohar. Yeah? And Aaron is a Korov. The push the terrorists. Zogdaflo. But Moshe was no longer a Korov. Because the rest of Kal Yisrael had what? Had a Kabbalah Satoru, which was imperfect because there was a mountain on top of their head. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he was up on top. He wasn't at the bottom. He wasn't in the situation where the mountain was Kafal of Harkigigis. Memele, his Kabbalah Satoira was a perfect Kabbalah Satoira. If his Kabbalah Satoira was a perfect Kabbalah Satoira, he's no longer Miriam's sister. So if it wouldn't be for the fact that he was a Zohar, Alf Torah wouldn't be a problem at all. Hafledik, to think like that, I'm saying his innovative capabilities, phenomenal. To think like that, now Zariah to the terrace. So we're looking for a perfect and balanced Kabbalah Satoira. That's what we're looking to do ourselves, to find a perfect and balanced Kabbalah Satoira. Because the most dangerous thing that people do is to go off on a tangent. Concentrate too much, perhaps on one aspect, as opposed to the other aspects of Yiddishkeit and what we're really looking for. I'll tell you what I'm looking for personally is to try to find balance in the approach towards Yiddishkeit, because with a balanced approach to Yiddishkeit you can overcome anything. There's no problem with overcoming things, there's no difficulties with overcoming things if you have the kind of balanced approach that you're supposed to have, which Torah gives you. Yeah, it's not a problem. Let me show you an instance of what I mean. Okay, David Ram says the reason why you read Rus on Shavuos, says David Ram, is because Rus, just like Klal Yisrael was begeder Gershon is Gaia, and we were all mekabel the Torah, Rus was factually, here is an instance of Gershon is Gaia, and she was mekabel kol haTorah kula. In fact, the Tur brings down that gematria of the word Rus is 606, yeah? And she already had seven mitzvahs mibnei noyach she already had before, so that what she took on Shavuos was an additional 606 mitzvahs over and above the seven mitzvahs she had before, makes 613 mitzvahs kundabah. Yeah, I want to show you though that Rus the Kabbalah Satoira was a very interesting and balanced Kabbalah Satoira. Let me show you why. I'll tell you a maisa. The Kotzker Rebbe was a very, very sharp individual who did not stomach fools. He was the kind of person, what I as an American would say, shot from the hip. He didn't even bother to take the pistol out of the holster. He would, the Kotzker Rebbe once came into his chassidim and he said, Chavre, I don't want you to be frum. They looked at him, a rabbi telling the chassidim he doesn't want him to be frum. You know why? Because somebody who's frum is an achzor. He's cruel. Makes sense. Psychologically, it makes sense. Just like you're making demands on yourself, which are hard to do, the tendency is the same kind of demands that you make on yourself, you make on other people as well. And when they don't meet your expectations, yeah, you throw them away. Right? I don't want you to be frum. Okay? Then he says, Chavra, I don't want you to be good. It's all designed good. They look at him. He says, Veshtavos, Vala Guter is about Taiva. Because somebody who is good has a tendency to be a Baal Taiva. Why? Because if you know how to please somebody else, you're going to know how to please yourself as well. So just like you know what's good for the other guy, and what he likes to eat, and what he likes to do, and what's comfortable for him, you're going to know what's nice and comfortable and pleasant for you. A good to Kenzana Baal Taiva. And the third thing he tells him is, Unchevre, I don't want you to be clever. Zeit nicht klug. You know why? Because a kluger is an apikoris. Because a kluger, somebody who is very intellectually bright, doesn't know when to stop thinking, when to stop asking, when not to go beyond where you're supposed to go with your human intellect, and therefore there is a tendency that the chassidim were bewildered. They turned around to him, they said, Rebbe, nicht frum, or nicht gut, or nicht klug, was am I, so what we gotta be? He said, Aladrai. You need to have all three of them, because each one is a balance for the other. It's like the three-legged stool, that if the legs are the same length, the stool is going to be flat on top. Because if you're klug, you'll know when you got to be frum and when you got to be good, and where you restrict and where you don't restrict. All three are essentials which need to meld, which need to be built into each other in order to have a balance. So let's have a look at Rus. On this basis, okay, where's the ancestry from Rus come from? Avraham Avinu had a nephew, man called Lot. Right? Lot absorbed from Avraham Avinu the midah of chesed in total. He was a tremendous Baal chesed, this Lot fellow. Araya, when the Malachim came to Sodom, at the risk of his own life, in Sodom, where this was absolutely verboten, in every which way, he takes these Malachim in and he gives them shelter and he gives them food. In the most precarious and the most dangerous situation. Okay? But Lot has a problem. He is got only chesed. And therefore, what does he transmit to his daughters? Only chesed. So his daughters, when they are concerned that there won't be anybody who will marry them, undertake and create an incestuous relationship, wherefrom are born Ammon and Moab. Says in the Torah. No miraculous stuff over here. Torah explains exactly how this took place. Ammon and Moab came from an incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. Willy nilly, he didn't want to, he wanted to, whatever you want to say, that's what happened. So Moab became a nation which was known for its promiscuity. Moab, the most promiscuous people, lived in Moab. Or Nishnodem, wegen dem, the Torah has a time against Moab. Lo yovoy amoyniu moyovi b'kaal Hashem, they can never marry into the Jewish people. Even after 10 generations, they can't marry into the Jewish people. Why? Shelo kidmu eschem b'lechem u'b'mayim, because they didn't come out to greet you with... If you guys have absorbed chesed, come on, you guys, you got chesed, you got the drawbacks of chesed, so you certainly got the positive side of chesed, so where were you when Klal Yisrael needed you? These are your cousins. Where were you to pay back what Avraham Avinu did for you, to his children? Nobody home. When it came to do the chesed, there was nobody there. So the Rebbe Hashem says, that kind of people I don't want to have with me. They're not joining up our club. We don't let these kind of people into our group. Now let's have a look at Rus. Rus is called the essence of chesed. Yeah? She's Imo Shel Chesed. In fact, for you people that are chassidim of the English language, what do you call somebody who's totally without kindness? He is ruthless, isn't he? Yeah? Somebody who's totally without kindness is ruthless. In Old English, in Chaucer's English, the word for kindness was ruth, R-E-U-T-H. I heard that from Mrs. Royd. Yeah. So she is the Imo Shel Chesed, the whole binyan of Ruth, that the Torah gives a whole Megillah on somebody, for somebody who concentrated on the idea of chesed. I could start telling you what the chesed, the chasodim that she did were, but they're phenomenal. First of all, here was an example. You know, you hear all kinds of stories about mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationships. Usually they're on the rocks, right? Or with difficulty. Here you got a situation where this young woman dedicates herself to the preservation of her mother-in-law, who is no longer her mother-in-law, because her husband is no longer alive. Where there was nothing left from the family estates, not a penny left from the family estates. There wasn't enough with which to bury. Machle Chita wasn't enough with it. And she sold her ksuba, which she had a right to, in order to provide, to furnish them with a respectable burial. The things that she did. She says, they finally come back to Klal Yisrael. She's sort of, she's the reject. Because it wasn't known at that time that you could marry a Moabite woman. And she says to her mother, you stay home, Mom. I'll go out and be malakit in the soda. I know you know this place and you know the people and people will have rahmanas on you. But it's pasnished for somebody like you at your age, yeah, for you to go out. I'll go. Even though people will look down at me and even though people will look at me as a proper neb and as a proper, you know, waste of time kind of thing, I'll go. Yeah, I mean, if you really examine it, it's just a half little fella. What is it that Boaz saw when she was being malakit in his field? Says Rashi, he knew that she was a kind person. He told her that he's already heard all about her, what she did in terms of kindness. But what did he see? He saw that she was from. Besides being good, she was from. He saw different steers. The only, when she was being malakit, the things that were on the ground, she was malakit, the things that were on the ground, she sat down on the ground in order not to expose herself. And he saw chachma. She took two, and she didn't take three. This itself is a beautiful Dvar Torah from the Chiddush Yerim. The Chiddush Yerim says, what's the chachma? She took two. If two is leket and three is not leket, so the grace of chachma, she made a moitzi on a piece of bread, she knew what the halacha was, so what's the chachma? So the Chiddush Yerim, there's a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi says, two is leket for the average poor person. But if somebody has all the qualities, to say they're an almona, and they're a geir, and they're an aniyah, they can even take three. So Ibazoi, so Yerushalmi, as far as that Yerushalmi is concerned, she could have taken three. But she's clever. When everybody else is taking two, she's going to take two along with them. Why should she be cut out of taking the twos when they can take the twos? The threes will wait until she comes back later because they can't take the threes. She'll be able to take the threes later. She'll get a double portion. That's divrei chachma. Be that as it may. But that's what he was looking for. What was Boaz looking for? Yeah, guta. Say a fine. Taka a guta. But a guta, if all there is kindness, and the kindness is not balanced, it's a dangerous situation because we're looking for balance. He wanted to see whether the other qualities that were necessary in order to have a balanced Kabbalah Satoira were there. Besides the good, there was the frum. Besides the good and frum, there was the cleverness. The whole thing melds together. The whole thing is valuable. This is what we're trying to achieve when we come to Kabbalah Satoira. This week we're coming to Kabbalah Satoira. We're going to think again about our commitment. We're going to think of again. We're going to relive what the Zkenim, what the elders, what generations, 3,300 and some odd years ago, what they experienced, what they went through, what they were makabel, their love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for us, because that hasn't changed. We still make Kiddush, we say Atabachatonu Mikol Amim, or Avto Yisonu, we say in Kiddush, Rashabach Abonu Mikol Am. Yeah, we say in davening, b'chatonu, Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Whatever we are, wherever we are, Kadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Whatever level we are, you should know, person should never, ever, ever be miayish and say, there is no hope for me. I'll bring you a raya. I'll bring you a raya from the Chumash. If you have a look at the end of Bahar, at the end of Bahar, we're talking about the lowest of the low, when a Jew hits rock bottom. What's the pshat? A Jew hits rock bottom, not only does he sell himself to a goy, but he sells himself to the church. He is now a kinyan of the Eikam Mishpachas Geis, or Rashi to Avodah Zarah itself. Not to be Oved Avodah Zarah, but to chop the wood and to draw the water, to ring the bells and to put the hymn books out on the what's name. He's an Eved of the church. Yeah? Zokti Rebbeinu Shlalem, you have to have Rachmanus in him and you have to take care of him. You know why? Because he's my man. You hear who the Rebbeinu Shlalem is prepared to associate himself with? Rebbeinu Shlalem calls this guy my man, my person, as I state impossible. So there's never a mokum for a person ever to be miyayish. And let's say you're going to go to Kabbalah Sotev, and let's say, chas v'sholem, you won't strike it right, you'll be in perhaps the wrong mood and things won't go right, it don't mean nothing. You pick yourself up and you start again. That's where it is. And if you have to do it 3 times a day, it's also worth doing. And I'll tell you a little story. I'll finish with a story. Hasidic story. The Rav of Kovna was Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. An extremely brilliant man. If you look at some of the things that are written and said in his name, it makes you feel just about that size. If you look compared to his knowledge, the breadth of knowledge and the intensity of knowledge, Hafle Vafel. So Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan had a din Torah once like this. There was a lady, a couple got married, they lived a few kilometers out of Kovna, and they decided that they were going to, the young man got a little bit of money for his nadan, he was going to open up a dry goods shop. Yeah, he's going to sell cloth. So they went into Kovna and they bought a stack of cloth, and they brought the cloth back to their town, their village. And over a year they sold all the cloth, but they made a cheshbon at the end of the year, you know, without the accountants, and they saw they weren't making big money. They were not making big money. They just about eked out an existence, just about, maybe there was even a slight loss, but they didn't make big money. So they had a little powwow with each other, they had a meeting, and they decided, you know why? Because we're only selling a limited range of goods. If we spend more and buy a larger range of goods and use a little bit of the money for advertising, then people will come from the surrounding villages, we will have the textile shop in the area, then we'll be able to hit the big time. Yeah? Ah, but sinish talking geld, you know what? We'll borrow. We'll go to our friends, our associates, we'll borrow money, we'll put together some big bucks for them in those days, and we'll go into Kovna and we'll choose the cloth and we'll have it chipped and we'll have a big business. So they borrow the money, and the husband sends the wife, puts the money into a billfold, and he sends the wife into Kovna to buy the stuff. She comes into Kovna, she got a cousin living in Kovna, she comes to the cousin's house and she unpacks her stuff. Gewaltige Schriegen. The billfold is not there. It's lost. She's lost the money. She goes absolutely hairless. She goes berserk. She goes, what am I going to do? How am I going to face my husband? What am I going to do? I'm going to be on knees. Cousin says, calm down. There's nothing we can do about it now. I'll go to Mincha. Maybe somebody's found the money and you'll get it returned. I'll go to Mincha. In the meantime, a different story is taking place. There was a Yid that was having a very hard time in Parnassah, and he went to shul, and nobody was in shul, and he opened up the Aron Kodesh, and he took his tefillin, and he started crying, Rabbeinu Shalom, please, I'm desperate, I need the money desperately, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he cried for some time, closed Aron Kodesh, walks out of shul, walks along the street, and look at that. There's a billfold on the floor. He goes and he picks up the billfold and he opens it up. Gewalt! A whole bunch of money. Very soon, thanks. Right? I prayed, you answered, gewalt. Right? Okay? So he decides, you know what? It's not just good to say thanks. I should really make a Suda Seidor and invite my friends and relations to come to a party. I've been saved from the worst kind of aneas. So this lady's cousin and this guy come to the same shul for mincha. This guy's busy putting up a sign. Yeah. Asura said, oh, tonight at 8 o'clock in my house, whatever it might be. And this guy's coming to shul trying to inquire if anybody found money. Didn't take all that long, and the two people were linked up with each other. The cousin and this guy were linked up with each other. Found the money? Yeah, found the money. Was in a gray billfold? Yeah, it was in a gray billfold. There was exactly so much money. Yeah, it was exactly so much money. But ask any kid that went to school. It's a Ir Sherubay Nochrim. It's a city where the majority of the people in the city are Goyim. And Ir Sherubay Nochrim, Yush is more or less immediate. So there's Yush, finished. Forget it. No way, no Rav in his right mind is going to pass it that I got to give back this money. Listen, I pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answers what he wants from me. Right? So the cousin doesn't know what to do. She says, look, at least be kind enough to go to the Rav. Let the Rav pass him, because this lady is going to go home. She has to at least demonstrate to her husband that she did everything that's possible to recover the money. She tried. She did everything. Let's go to the Rav. She says, what? Go to the Rav? Make a fool of myself? Everybody knows the halach. Ask a 9-year-old kid. We'll learn from Mitzir. He'll tell you straight away what the halach is. Do me a favor. Yeah, but she has to be able to go home and say, okay, you want to, but listen, I hope this doesn't take too much time. Yeah, because I have to make this Suda. I invited people for the Suda Seidor for what's taking place. Right. So they go into the Rav. And the Rav hears first the side of the guy that found the money. The guy stands up and says, Rebbe, I davened to the Rebbeinu Shloim and I was broke. And the Rebbeinu Shalom answered me, and this is the money, and I know the simonim, and I know the whole thing, but everybody knows, Yish. The Rav says, right, I've heard your side, now let me hear her side. And she, this woman is crying her eyes out, and the Rav calms her down, and the Rav says, tell me, who signed the checks in your business? She says, my husband. Who takes the stock? My husband. This guy's impatient. He says, Rebbe, what's that got to do with the price of cheese? What are you asking these kind of questions for? It's an open and shut case over here. And Rabbi Yisrael Chanan says, I heard what you had to say. It's my turn now. I'm investigating what she has to say. Please be quiet until I'm finished. Right? And he goes on asking her all the kinds of questions. Who checks? Who does make sure that deliveries are out? Who counts up the money? He asks her the whole business. Right? When he's finished asking her, he turns around and he says to the fella, you gotta give the money back to this woman. But Rebbe, what do you mean I gotta give the money back? What do you mean? She has no right to be miyayish. She has no right to give up. It ain't hers. She's a shliach. She's only a shliach of her husband to conduct the business. She was sent beneficially, not detrimentally. She has no right to be miyayish. But that's what I'm paskening. This is not a miras chassidus, and I'm not asking you to be kind. That's the halacha. Her yush is valueless. And he made him give the money back to the woman that lost the money. When one of the greatest of the Bali Musa heard this story, he jumped up and down. And he turned around to his Talmidim. And he said, Aboisai, do you own you? Are you the Bala boss over you? It's the Rebbeinu Shlomo's. We belong to the Rebbeinu Shlomo. And if we belong to the Rebbeinu Shlomo, what kind of yush could we ever make? How could we ever give up? Our yush is worthless. Gornish vad. Gornish vad. Yeah? So the Altaf Slabodka used to tell this over to the Bachrim with a simcha. He says, look, halacha shows me you're never allowed to be miyayish. You've had a bad morning. It can happen. I don't want to admit it too much in public, even though this is going out. But I also sometimes have a bad morning. But the only way to go on is you pull your socks up and you say, okay, so I'll start again. I'm starting again this afternoon. I'll start again right after lunch. I'm going to start again. And it's the only way you ever get there. That's the emes. I'm telling you the truth. Even the great people that got there, you think that they had a smooth road all the way from the bottom. They jumped up and they became Gedolei Yisrael. It's not true. They have setbacks and they have difficulties like you have setbacks and you have difficulties. Oh, you can't believe that. You look at somebody, right? And you can't believe it. It's true. And it's the only way to deal. And the truth is, in life, there are going to be countless times that you're tempted to say, Am I telling the truth? I'm telling the truth, right? And I'm telling you now, and you've heard it here, and you heard it from a guy with a gray beard who's not as young as he used to be. And I'm telling you, it's just not worth it. You pick yourself up, and you start again. That's where it's at. And you'll thank me one day, because that's the only way you can operate. You pick yourself up, and you start again. That's the way you get there. The Rebbeinu Shem should help. That we should have a richtige Kabbalah Satoira, that we should have a balanced Kabbalah Satoira, that we should learn from Torah Toisha how to look at things, not like society teaches us to look at things, to learn from the Torah Toisha what's important and what's less important and how to deal. And if Mitzvah Hashem, if we'll do that, we will have not only Olam Haba, I'm not talking about Olam Haba, we will have Olam Hazeh. You will enjoy your lives. If you go according to the Torah, you'll be Ashrecha b'Olam Hazeh, b'toiv lach l'Olam Haba. And that's my bracha to all of you in Zayit Gezunt, Chazak v'Amatz.